Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up for your trial today.
Hey there. Welcome to Nick Pollock and Friends, where I talk to people I know and who you should know. Today, it's Mike Kurland. Mike, how you doing?
I don't know if I agree if they should know me, but I'm glad to meet them if they don't.
Stop it.
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Mike, I mean, you've been a part of a lot of things in the day, which is awesome. It's great to see your resume continue to get built. You have a fantastic new venture right now called GTE Fantasy, and I want you to tell everybody, what have you done and where can they find you now?
Like you said, what haven't I done?
Yeah.
the journey to, air quotes, make it has been a long one. And you realize real quick, you can stretch yourself real thin, and quantity does not equal quality, and honestly, doing more isn't always the answer. So that's my long-winded way of saying that I've been a little bit everywhere. Fantrax, Rotoballer, Prospects Live for a little bit even.
And you haven't mentioned The Athletic yet?
I was getting there. I finally worked my way 4 years later, or three and a half, about 4 years later, I think. I landed on The Athletic, which is obviously one of like the goal places I set out to land when I started. I've come together with some friends of mine to do GTE, like you mentioned, which is short for Gaining the Edge. So it's a good, decent name. One of the better names that we've come up with over the years, and many failed ventures, by the way. And it's me, my good friend, Bubba, Simeone, and George. Me and George have been doing base loaded podcasts. That was the first thing I ever did to get started in the industry. So George and I, he's been like my right hand man all these years. And I've met all these guys through this space. So it goes to show you that you can form legitimate relationships through this space. You and I met through this space. Then we met in person a couple of times between First Pitch Florida. And it's just one of those things that one thing leads to another. Arizona, we hung out for a little bit. You yelled at me for my potty mouth on multiple occasions.
It was unbelievable how
it's
much.
It's bad.
It was. Yeah. Was that during or not during you were wearing the Justin Mason swimsuit? I don't know.
I mean, the Justin Mason swimsuit brings out the best in any man. I don't care what you say.
I believe it. Yeah.
But it's been one of those things where it's just one thing led to another. Now it's I've actually honed in my focus. The Athletic and GTE are the only places I do stuff. And GTE is kind of trying to tackle different formats. You and I were talking about YouTube. We can get back into that. But YouTube's been my main focus outside of the writing and, like, you know, the charts I do, the spring training stuff I'm going to get back into here sooner than later. Gaining the Edge, my YouTube channel has been kind of my main focus right now in this offseason. And it's definitely a unique thing because, as you alluded to, how just difficult it can be. But that's what's going on now. Gaining the Edge. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/GTEFantasy.
There you go.
And I know you wanted me to plug it, but
I was going to plug it, but you know, you're an expert. Now you got this.
Yeah. It's an expert and a professional. Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm really good at talking, but really good at talking in circles or veering off various directions, which is what has been my issue with content. The whole 4 or 5 years I've been doing this now is that it took a lot for me to be like, oh, rein it in, less is more, get focused, find your niche, which I did. Right. And it's what's found and led me to success over the last, I'd say, year and a half. Has been like my most successful year and a half, all things considering it. But it took me 3 years of probably the hardest hustle I've ever done anything in terms of like a side thing in my whole life.
Right.
And how hard can fantasy be, right? Well, you've done it. You realize.
It's not fantasy, though. It's
business. Not.
It is such a difficult thing.
But no one real. People don't see that. I feel like people don't see that unless you're in the industry, and then you realize, wow, there is more to this than just putting your opinions out there on a piece of paper, like on an article or ranks. Ranks take hours. Ranks. You're arguing with yourself for like 30 minutes on this player versus this player, same tier, same glob, whatever you want to call it, blob, whatever everyone calls them. But those types of things take more time than you realize. We don't just throw names on a piece of paper. And when we do, we're not even comfortable with the outcome because we're like, well, I can kind of see this outcome, but this outcome. And that's just ranks. That's just ranks.
Yeah. The end of the day, it's one of our mission statements here at PitcherList is we're not in the business of being right. We're in the business of good discussion, which is, over the years, it's been one of the hardest things about what I do. Is, I mean, my whole thing is built on, hey, I have a top 100 list. And it's often wrong. Get out of here. That's crazy. Yeah, it's wrong all the time. Of course it is. I can't possibly be right all the time. Are you joking? I'm happy if I'm right like 60% of the time. That would be a fantastic season.
I think that should be the goal. That's been my goal, honestly. If I could just be right a little more, then I'm wrong.
Right, exactly. To showcase that you have some skill at this. But then there's also the idea of being, you know, there's a consensus and being more right than the consensus in some way. But I mean, even that is just, it's so silly. These are humans we're talking about. These are in, you know, they can get injured or change and all of this. It's weird to have such emotion tied to something that you're not actually influencing. But
I think you brought up a good point with the human side of things real quick. I feel like I've been, and over the last 2 years, I've been more mindful of it. And then this year I've added a little more of, cause you, and you speak from a player standpoint too, and you speak to a lot of players. So that gives you like a little bit of inside, you know, thought process. We often, and as analysts, and I think the industry as a whole has really moved towards analytics. And I think analytics are a great tool. I think we've also overly depended on them. I think we've gotten better, but I think there was a couple years where we just got so dependent on the numbers, forgetting that like you mentioned, these people are humans. They have family issues. They have personal issues. They have hot streaks, cold streaks. They get mentally in and out of the game. They have injuries that might throw off their stuff. They have swing issues, mechanical issues, things that the numbers might show in a way, but won't show. Or, hey, this player changed and these outcomes are good, but I can't quite see why. Oh, right. There's a little bit of rise on that fastball all of a sudden over the last month or something, like little things like that. And then you find out, oh, he changed his grip. And it's like, it's just, the thing is, though, is we need to be more open-minded to realizing that there's human error, but also, especially with young players, try building in and baking in some positive regression for something. Like, don't just take these underlying numbers as this is who they are. And I speak from personal experience, being guilty of this last year. I had an issue with projecting growth with players, and it goes back to them being human people. And just even veterans, like look at Matt Carpenter. If you read, there was an article about him calling Joey Votto saying, hey, Votto, how did you age well? Basically, how did you adjust your game as you got older? And Carpenter made a point to do some of the practices Votto did as he's aged, and Carpenter took those changes and look what we saw. If you listened to that article and bought in even a little bit in these, and we're talking about the deepest of leagues before, you know, sure, where you probably, if you drafted them at all during the preseason. And, but that's the type of thing. It's where it's like way the game's changing. These players are doing things that we've never done thought of before either. So there's a human aspect that we really need to try to be more cognizant of from an industry standpoint, I feel like, and the analytics take away from that. But I really do feel strongly, obviously, because I want to just state that we can't got to stop overlooking these players being just regular people.
Right. I don't want to get too much in the weeds about actual fantasy baseball analysis on this.
I know.
But what I will mention is something I do try and harp on a lot. Because, I mean, look, we both in this industry hear a lot of voices that can be obtrusive or just not what we want to hear as we're trying to progress. A lot of negative talk, right? Saying, how could you think this? This is ridiculous. This is stupid. And a lot of these extreme emotions that are just, you got to push those away. But a lot of the reason why we get those is, I mean, of course, there are the people that complain after the fact. And that's just ridiculous because you aren't complaining before the fact. So who are you? But if you say something beforehand, before you think it's going to happen, and say, well, no, the numbers say this. What I like to go back to is there's a reason why everyone is a major leaguer. And the reason I say that is a pitcher is on the hill. He might have a 5.5 ERA for a year, but he didn't have a 20 ERA. He didn't allow a home run every single inning. Like, he gets guys out for at a decent rate, actually. And that means there are going to be days that Patrick Corbin is really good, right? Regardless of what we want to say about him, there were starts this year where he was actually good. In fact, I think actually he was about 50-50 in his starts of actually being good or not, which is so shocking because it's Patrick Corbin. Like, this is one of the, but there's a reason why he's a major leaguer, right? And anytime a guy's going through a bad patch or a good patch, The question is, he's doing well now. Will he continue to do this? Is this, you know, sustainable or not? And it's not just based on the luck of it. He's playing well. There's no, like, how it was with Barrios even last year. He's doing really poorly. Does that mean that he's always going to do poorly now? No, it isn't. I mean, Barrios had moments even last year too. So it's the hardest thing that we do. It is the hardest thing, especially like in the beginning of the year, it's discerning just because he's doing X now and deservedly so. All the, you want to get all the tweets about the Statcast sliders. It should be the pitcherless bars, by the way, but that's just me. It doesn't matter because we get that he's doing well and he deserves to do well, but will he deserve to do well later? I don't know. So that's the whole thing. But this podcast, there are two accomplishments or goals I want to accomplish on this with you. One, I want to learn more about Mike Curland the human, and I got you more into this and stuff. But I do want to hear a lot of your anecdotes and personal experience of jumping into this field in 2017, 2018. Maybe it's 2019. You'll establish that for us. And the journey you've had, what you would suggest from someone picking up, what has worked for you, what hasn't. And just having an open conversation about that as someone who I'm sure has gone through a lot of the things that you're struggling with too. I'm still figuring this whole thing out myself. It changes often. It's fun. And we'll go through that. So, but let's start at the beginning here. Who is Mike Curland? Where did you grow up? What were your dreams and aspirations when you were a kid?
Man, that's a deep question. No, we're starting there, eh? Who am I? So, born and raised in Florida. I still live in Florida, so that's about as much information I'll give in terms of where I live in Florida. But I live in Florida. No, it's just honestly, I don't even know how I ended up here in life, and I feel like that's how I attack life in general. I just kind of exist. I've always been an outgoing person, very talkative, very. I always have a close group of friends, which goes to show you I'm working with my closest group of friends on GTE, and it's because I keep a tight-knit circle, but I'm very friendly and open and very big into meeting new people. So I feel like that attitude and that way of being just led me through life. I played sports growing up, played baseball, but I was very social and more into chasing girls than chasing the ball in high school. So I quit baseball and ended up with a kid at 18. So that shows you I did. I caught one, right? My first kid, I have three kids, all very, I was young. I'm 32 now, but I was 18 just before my 19th birthday, 21. So when you're supposed to be, you know, having your first cigarette, having your first drink, I decided to have kids. No big
good
deal.
No cigarettes.
Cigarettes. I tried them for like a week. It wasn't for me. I actually, so
never had one. I never will.
It's not worth it. Like I did it. I did it almost as a social, it was a social thing. I tried them thing. I was drinking and, I was doing it for about a week. And then when I actually got my first craving to go outside and take a smoke break at work, I was like 21. I was like, yeah, no, never again. That's when I stopped. Cause I was like, I see how this is going. My parents are smokers. I should know better. This is is what you wanted, by the way. This is the type of conversation you wanted.
This is that's good.
No, I'm very actually, I'm an open book, Nick. You'll
this,
get
this morning. Actually, I met one of my best friends. She just had her first child. He's 7 days old or so.
Yeah.
Oh, and now I hear you're like 18. You're 18 as a parent and everything. And I just go, man, dude, that's awesome. So I don't know. You're not an old dad, is what I'm trying to get.
No,
at.
It's bittersweet. So that part we'll get to real quick. But yeah, I had kids young, and I'm for those who don't know, I'm a full time firefighter paramedic. That's my trade. That's what I get paid to do. This everything I do on the side. You would think I do enough work sometimes where people actually think I do this full time, and I'm like, sure. No, I just have really bad habits of prioritizing this stuff sometimes when I shouldn't, to be honest. And that's been something we'll get into that later. You mentioned you want to talk about some stuff I've learned. You have to really realize the truth about a lot of this industry and set realistic standards and goals for yourself. But that's neither here nor there. Again, we'll speak about that later, as you mentioned, which, by the way, this, I have no script. I'm speaking straight off the top of the head for those listening.
There's no script. You think there's a script for this show?
You gave me a layout of things you plan on covering. And I'm like, I'm glad one of us knows. I just love talking. So I'll talk about anything.
I mean, that layout was like, yeah, there's are two areas where I see we can have conversation. Oh, you know,
Nick, I promise you, if you
I don't even do research on anyone that comes on for the purpose of this, because I don't want anything to be disingenuous.
No, and one thing you'll learn about me throughout the rest of this conversation is that I'm an open book. You'll get anything you ask, I'll answer. I'm not really shy about talking about anything, even the toughest of subjects. And I feel like that's actually part of the job. So what I was mentioning is what I do for a living. It's changed me in the way that I'm overly comfortable in the most awkward situations. And I realize that makes other people very uncomfortable.
What was your favorite TV show when you were a kid?
That's a curveball. Rugrats came to mind instantly.
Rugrats, okay, that's pretty good. Batman, 90s, the animated
90s
series.
Kid,
Every 4:30 on the dot, I had to be watching Batman, the animated series. I remember, I have a sick memory of, I think like my mother's friend was a psychologist, so I was doing like some tests for them. And then, but I had to get home in time for Batman, the animated series. I just made it at 4:30. Right as Batman's on the top of the building and the lightning strikes.
I was a Nickelodeon kid, so Hey Arnold was another big one. I got a little older, Hey Arnold was a big one. Absolutely. Football head.
But all right, so how old are you now, Mike?
So I'm 32 now, and I mentioned three kids, really young. Being a young dad's great. It's bittersweet. The hardest part when you're young, if I didn't have my parents helping me out, I wouldn't have made it this far.
Sure.
I was very fortunate to not only have kids young, but have a very solid support system that could help me out as much as they did. Not rich by any means, but not
wonderful.
Poor.
But no,
so.
But that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's what helped me get through having kids young. Cause you know, I mean, I love my kids, but it was, you know, it was an accident, not a mistake. It was an accident. The second one was also an accident cause apparently I didn't learn my lesson, but the part that's awesome is that I'm young enough to appreciate my kids being able to do things with them. I was actually right before this, I was outside playing basketball with the neighbors and all of our kids were all playing basketball. And that's realized I can't jump like I used to. I can tell you that much. I tried dunking a ball on 9-foot rim. Like I can never do 10 feet, but 9 feet I used to be able to. I could touch the rim, but I can't get the ball over. So I'm realizing as I'm getting older now, it's a little more difficult to do the things I did as a kid, especially without the training. But yeah, so 32 years old, man. It's I'm not old, but I still feel young. I just realize that there are limitations now because like things like today is a reminder that, oh, you're not 20, 21 anymore, you know?
Right. Yeah, I'm gonna be 35 this year, Mike. And I'm not happy about that. I'm sorry, you know, I'm feeling it in my body a little, just a little bit of achiness, a little bit more.
You're aging like fine wine, man. Fine wine.
All right. apparently I've got some silver a little up here on my temple.
I have it mostly in my beard. It's weird. I can't grow a beard because of my job, but I have a little bit like a couple like strands up here, but my beard is thick with it when it grows out. It's kind of, I'm like, oh, that's not bad.
Well,
the way
I see life is you do the things that you can and that you enjoy, and everything, every journey that you have is different. Everyone has a different one. For example, for me, there's no way, no chance Pitcherless exists. You know, I'm 34 and I don't have any kids, right? And the way that it does, I'm able to spend that time. That said, it's not that I am happy with that decision or something along those lines. It's more of, okay, this is what was given to me and I'm doing what I can with what I have with that, right? And on your side, I mean, you have three children, man. That's amazing. It's something truly special about that.
Unfortunately, I do unfortunately take it for granted sometimes. I over prioritize certain things over them at times, which I'm not proud of, but it's the truth. And it's almost because like you don't realize. And honestly, they say like life, like when you get older, and I'm sure you've realized this, but days turn into weeks, months.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's flying by. And my kids are 14, 11, and 5 now. Oh, I'm 32. Lord. I have a 14-year-old.
Right.
But it's weird. It's one of those things where the first 5-6 years of my oldest one's life, it was such a struggle period that I really had a hard time enjoying a lot of moments. But sure. I think parenting as a whole it's littered with what I call 5% moments. 95% of it is so hard and difficult, but those 5% moments make up for it. My kid made his first like legitimate basket today. My 5-year-old, he's almost 6. We don't have a basketball hoop, but he made his first like basketball, like it was like 8-foot-tall basket. He made his first one today. And he's like, "You're so proud of me, Dad." And I'm like, that's the 5% moment. But when I get off this podcast and I'm yelling at him later for doing something, that's the 95% about. Sure. So it's like, but you live for those moments, those 5% moments, man.
Yeah. It's a very special thing.
It can and, be.
no, it is. I'm very much, I don't know. There's a lot of philosophy I can go into about this stuff, but it's ridiculous. It's weird, whatever this life is and all that kind of stuff. And that is as a crazy part about it. Yeah, that's all go into that. I mean, I will say, like we've talked about with looking at this industry and how hard it is and all of that, that is a very important part I talk about with PitcherList is I'm able to devote so much time to this. And that is not a luxury that many get to have. And I do not take that for granted in the slightest.
And my job allows me to put more than your average father of three into this as well, because my schedule is 24 on, 48 off. My 48 right. off, when my kids are in school, which this is where baseball kind of like, it starts when they're in school, but halfway through the year, they're on summer break. That's when I struggle because now they're home all the time. But
right.
like Monday through Friday when they're at school and there's no winter break or nothing, I'm home for like 8 hours a day in the morning where that's where I'm crushing the content. And that's why sure. there's this balance where, but the issue is over the years, it used to be, even when they got home, I didn't stop. And I right. would just, because in my head, I had this vision of what it is to make it and what like, oh, I'm going to make it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It is nearly impossible. It's like the top 1% of the top 1% do this full time.
So, so to transition into that, I do really want to go into it, but before we do, we have mm-hmm. to take a quick break.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat, and that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
But yeah, I really mean that. I think it's a very special thing. I think I've said the story before we get back into it, but when I was at MSG, Bill Pito, I sat next to him. You know him, the ESPN anchor guy who is now does like MSG with his thing. I was like, oh my God, it's Bill Pito. And I'm at like the Lucite table. I should never have this gig, by the way, just to let you know.
You underestimate.
I'm serious though.
You need to stop.
My whole goal, anytime I'd be able to do this, was to try and become friends with Bill Pito. That's all I cared about. So I'm trying to talk to him beforehand. At one point we have a conversation. Do you have a girlfriend? All that kind of stuff. And I say, so how'd you meet your wife, whatever? And he said, well, it was my age and stuff. And he looked at me and goes, I don't like being an old dad. And I was like, oh boy. Oh man. You know, and that, you know, I hear that. I get that a lot. So there's many ways of being envious about it. Like you're
yeah,
able
but-
to be that with their, I understand also like in your 20s that you feel like, and I can totally grasp it. I don't want to put this on an air, but yeah, I can totally understand just feeling like, man, I didn't get to do all this stuff that everyone gets to do in their 20s. And
we can air all of it. I don't really mind putting it. No, my thing is I don't mind putting it out there. My thing was in my 20s, I never felt that sense of envy. I was never a partier. I was never somebody that wanted to go out to clubs.
Sure.
I was never, because I was such a homebody,
right.
I never really felt that I missed out on my 20s. I felt like I'm actually enjoying the fact that I'm going to be my kids are going to be grown. I'm going to be, my youngest is 5, turning right. 6. So, even by the time he's, in 10 years from now, I'll be 42. Mm-hmm. He'll be 15, 16. I'll be able to live my life now as an adult. And my thing is I enjoy the idea of traveling now. When I was 20, in my 20s, I couldn't afford to travel where I wanted to.
Oh,
I still really can't. But at least as an adult, I can plan better. I can make sure the finances are placed.
So
I think I'm going to be able to enjoy that.
Really? That's not really, yeah. I think, what I'm going for. It's
Well, in general, just enjoying life, enjoying
I look at myself as someone who wasn't me until I turned about 26, 27.
I see. Okay.
And there is, you know, I have friends that have gone through, you know, many different experiences, and the worry that I hear and witness sometimes is that people do feel that. And I'm super, like, it's wonderful to see, like, no, man, this is great, and I'm happy about this. That's awesome. Because I've seen it from people where they're, you know, the conversations I've had, people to me saying, like, yeah, I feel like the 20s, I didn't get to, you know, just like kind of explore as much as I wanted to. Doesn't seem like that's the case with you, which it means, like, hell yeah, I'm glad you had a kid at 18.
My thing is I look at my 20s, I look back, and I think that I grew so much, but I actually became a man versus trying to find myself. I also vaulted because I had kids young and I wanted to be responsible. And part of it was my fault. I had a great stepfather growing up. He raised me, but I never knew my real father. And that was kind of fueled my fire of, like, I don't want to be a deadbeat father to my kids. So I also wanted to set a good example. So my thing was, I grew up fast, and there were times, and I could think back and remember there were times I was like, this sucks. Like, I'm not really being a kid anymore. But then I'm like, wait, I'm not a kid anymore. And it kind of went and clicked. And now honestly, as I've hit my late 20s and my early 30s, and finding fantasy baseball as like an outlet in terms of like, just kind of like getting, this is like me being a kid still. I get to talk sports, and I get to compete against other friends of mine in sports, in theory, in a sport, you know? And this is still me being, this is my kid side of me coming out. But at the end of the day, my 20s weren't that typical, like, your 20-year-old stage. There was so much personal growth there. Mm-hmm. I look at now, I'm in my 30s, and honestly, it's like, I love where my life's at now. But it took really struggling those last 10 years. And by struggling, I mean, you know, most emotionally, physically, mentally. I mean, the personal growth there, because I went through, I can see this thing. I've never been a depressed person. So I've never been, you know, diagnosed depressed or anything. So there's never been an issue there. Everyone's sad. Everyone's depressed at times. I think that's normal. I think it's normal to feel that way on occasion, even if you're not someone clinically depressed. Because there's days where you wake up, you're like, I don't want to do any. You have a list this long and want to do nothing. You lay in bed all day, but then you beat yourself up and feel guilty because you didn't get nothing done, but you were supposed. But anyway, besides stuff like that, man, it's just it's wild that I forgot where I was going with this thought process. But 20s were just all about personal growth, and then this last year hit, and I was, you know, 32, and I realized my life isn't where I wanted to be mentally or physically anymore, and I was 322 pounds, Nick. You saw me. I was really big when you saw me too. And, you know, people like, you know, and you can, I wasn't really, I wasn't, I can't ever say I was depressed, but I was definitely not mentally 100% fit. I wasn't mentally fit. And my way of hiding that always has been, you know, self-deprecating humor. And it always will be. I don't care if I'm the most jacked guy in the fantasy space. If I'm the next D Mendy, you know, I say Mendy because Mendy's in great shape, but, I don't care if I'm the next, you know, the I don't care how good shape I am. I'm in.
Was he doing like deadlifts of 300 a day or something like that? On Twitter.
He was doing something, and but he's in great shape, and he's in great shape. A great guy. He's also a great guy. I really like Mendy. But my point is obviously I'm joking in terms of like, I don't care what I'm like, how good I look or perceive myself as looking or how good I feel. I'm always going to take a joke at myself just because it's my humor. I enjoy jokes at my own expense. You hate them. I love them. Because I remember
I think Curlin deserves better. That's why
I know, but I also enjoy the being laughed at. I'm being laughed with and laughed at the same time. I mean, I wore a woman's onesie, Nick.
There's something of like you choosing. Yeah, it's everybody enjoying it with the security of it. There's one, but then there's the little comments that you don't need to make because you're dope.
Yeah,
you don't need to insert that extra element into your dialogue.
I agree. I can actually agree with that. I think it's almost a defense mechanism because you don't want to face the truth of certain situations or aspects of your life.
I mean, I do this often. I have anxiety. So so that's something I do to kind of nullify the anxiety, the open one, right? Something I tried as much as I can personally to push away.
Yeah, I think it's almost a self okay, I'm going to do this because there's some truth to it and it kind of hurts, but I don't want to admit it hurts. So if I joke about it, people can't. Exactly. It's almost like a sense of power. I feel like if you joke about something and you're the first one to joke about it,
nobody gets Tyrion Lannister thing. Wear it like armor.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody could take that from you. Nobody can take that control or power over you because you've owned it already.
Yep. That's how I always don't negotiate with terrorists, right? Is that, you know, they try and hold something over you, then you just don't give them the thing, because all that matters is your own decisions and your own pride and all of that. And if you just throw that away for a second, you'll realize that you can still have it.
So all that led to me changing my whole life the last 6 or 7 months in terms of like physically, mentally getting to a better place. I'm down 65 pounds. I work out 3 to 4 days a week right now. I'm eating better. My kids notice it. My kids are working out with me. So it's a ripple effect, because you're a role model for your family. You really are. Sure, for your family, your friends, the people you surround yourself with also see you. So in theory, and you'd like to think that if you could be a positive, if you could make positive changes to yourself, maybe it might influence them to make similar positive changes.
There's something I call the stumble rule, which I might have even mentioned last time, but it was the stumble rule is I live on a corner essentially of a block, and if I trip and fall a little bit, or I stumble right before the corner, the second I turn to the avenue, no one knows I stumbled. And the way I use that is every single movement moving forward, I have an opportunity to show something that I want to show, that I can be acting in a certain way that I want to. I'm going to meet new people, interact with new people. And every single moment, I have a new chance to be the person I want to be. So it's not necessarily, it's so easy to beat yourself about something that you didn't do, as you said before. It goes the whole day and I get so upset that I haven't done this thing. I'm like, right, yeah, that's the thing I struggle with all the time. And I find that I need to either accept, am I doing this or not? And just say, if no, then just enjoy it and give yourself the time to not beat yourself up. And then you say, cool, I'm going to do it for 2 minutes. And you find that those 2 minutes turn into 1 hour. Those are the different ways of combating that I found. But you get to reestablish yourself. And that's what personal inventory is, right? It's so important. I cannot emphasize it enough. Some say that inventory is maturity. When they say that people are acting immature or not, the definition of that is looking inward and actually becoming what you want. I could not express that enough. So the stumble rule, it's an important thing. You certainly did it. And I'm proud of you for it.
Oh, thanks. I have a hard time accepting like positive affirmations and just, I've always had a hard time just being like, you know what? I did a good job. But this is the first time, like I said, I'm trying to be better about that and just be like, look, I've earned these things. I deserve to be proud of myself. And like the athletic, it took me over. I wrote there this. I'm going on my second year now. And this is the first. And honestly, I did. I was excited.
You have that legit check.
It's funny because when I get my direct deposit, it says New York Times on it. So I'm a New York Times. Right, I'm a New York Times writer. There it is. That's a joke. I'm sorry. Like, that's hilarious to me to be able to say that. As a jokingly, because let's be honest, it's fantasy baseball. Like, I'm writing, but technically it says New York Times on the direct deposit. So it's really funny to see that. But yeah, I'm proud of that. But it was one of those things where I never really said out loud that I deserve it. But I'm honestly coming to terms that it's like, no, I worked my tail off. I've given this my all, and I've put this ahead of my family at times, which I'm not proud of that, by the way, and I wouldn't recommend anyone doing that. But I did that, and unfortunately, it took all that, and none of that is what actually it didn't. That's not what paid off. It was all the failures that finally led me to a niche in 2020 that paid off.
So I want to jump into that from there. That's what I was trying to do before the break. Then we got this fun conversation. Tell me your first venture into fantasy baseball.
So it was the Bases Loaded podcast was my original. What made you start that? Yeah, I mentioned that. That was my first ever. I was never going to write, Nick. I told myself I don't want to write. I have no interest in writing. I'm just going to podcast because I love talking. Sure. And I did a solo podcast and realized I could do this by myself, or I could randomly ask Twitter because I had like 100 followers at the time, maybe. And I asked someone. Someone helped me retweet it, and George reached out to me, George and Zach. Zach has stopped podcasting with us. We still talk behind the scenes. He's lost interest over the years, and that's fine. This was a fun hobby. We built something awesome over the first couple of years, all three of us.
This is Zach.
Zach Braff. Same name as the Scrubs actor. Yeah, Zach Braff. Two really good friends of mine. And we still, like I said, we still talk behind the scenes. We still talk baseball, but Zach just doesn't have the interest he once had, which is fine. Again, it's all good. it's really no big deal. And
Right. I mean, that's, I've been in this. Oh my Lord. Gosh. I started in 2014. I mean, I started working in this site in 2013. So I guess 10 years now. Can I actually say 10 years? Oh boy.
Oh, a decade. Boy. You've been
doing this for getting old, Mike.
A decade, Nick.
I was like the young blood once.
And that's a weird, isn't that a weird transition? Because I feel like now I'm going on 5 years now. I've entered that veteran stage, so to speak.
Oh boy.
You know what I'm talking about? Like I'm a veteran now.
But
the Base Loaded podcast, that was the first ever venture. I came in with the intent, I want to rival CBS and all, like CBS, wrong, completely wrong.
Pharma's a tough one, man.
Yeah. They'll take you out if you rival them.
Absolutely.
Yes. But
yeah, it's hard to rival CBS for many reasons, of course. But
when you're new, you don't realize this.
Right.
When you're new, you have these huge things like these ideas like of grandeur of like, I can do this. Why can't I? Who no one else is, when you realize, oh, wow, there's a lot of people doing this as a fun little side hobby.
You were doing the Bases Loaded podcast. What was your next one after that?
The podcast is still the only thing ever. I helped Ray. I did do like a small thing with Ray over at Prospects 360.
Ray Butler. That is
Ray Butler.
Yeah.
Ray Butler. I helped him with that because I had such a passion but I also had this like again, everything was like grow. How do I grow as fast as possible? So I bit off way more than I can chew. And I helped host his podcast for a little bit, but I realized it wasn't my wheelhouse and the schedules, it was hard. So that didn't last as long as I would have liked as much. And Ray's a great guy, but seems like, he's kind of taken the backseat because, he has a family now. And I think he realized how much time that takes, but
totally. I mean, I can't do the SP round of forever, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know what is going to happen, but I can't do it forever. Find some protege or someone, please be the person to do it. And then of course my analysis is going to go south, but that's just how this works.
I feel like you pick and choose. Like you'll find, honestly, Nick, you'll land on your feet. If anybody will, you'll find a happy medium where you'll still be involved, but not quite as heavily. And your analysis will still be fine, but you can't just give this up in terms of like the habits you've built with walking baseball and enjoying the sport for what it is and interacting with the community as you have. I don't ever see you giving that up, but a back seat one day, I could see that, but it's one of those things that like you think I don't want you to doubt your analysis, the involvement, sure, but the analysis, it's been bad. It's always going to be bad. No, I'm kidding.
I'll probably just have random videos and be like, oh my God, James Caprillion, you're much better than everyone thinks you are,
James Caprillion hasn't pitched in 3 years.
We call him. All right. So you did the stuff at Prospects 365.
And then I was like, you know what? Again, growth was all I cared about. I didn't care about enjoyment. I put growing in this industry over enjoyment. So I started writing, and I wrote my first ever site I wrote for was called the FSGN. It's not even around anymore. Mm-hmm. It was almost like
Fantasy
one of
the sports degens with Casey Bubba.
No. No, it was FSGN, Fantasy Sports Gaming Network.
Right.
It was legitimately a small, like pretty much like what I've done in the past where I threw together a site and it was like a WordPress site. And like I wrote for him for free just to write something, just to get experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And this is before I didn't even know who Bubba was. I didn't know Justin Mason. I didn't know anybody where I could have written for these guys too already. These guys had, platforms that they would have gladly had me on. But I didn't know these guys at all. So I just found somebody, started writing. And I took that and landed Fantrax when they applied. I applied to Nick Pollock too.
You did.
The same time I applied to Fantrax and Fan. And
did I tell you about that application? Did we talk about that?
I don't think we ever talked about that. And I've always joked with you about it because I honestly never took it. I never had it. It was never a heart.
I'm okay telling you, I think, why we passed at that time. It's the hardest part, I think, about the industry and stuff. And essentially there's a certain flow of writing that at that moment, I didn't think you had locked down yet.
Oh, I was a terrible writer. I've gotten way better, but still.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying like, this was like back in what, 2018 or something?
18 or 19. Yeah, it was way long time ago.
I think it's actually the most common skill that isn't understood in the industry. That's a fantasy writer. And there's a lot of people that focus just on the fantasy and not the writing. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm the world's greatest writer or anything like that. I've written so many bad things in my day. I look back at my initial pitcher gift stuff And there's, oh boy, I use double spaces after a period. Okay. Just first and foremost, dunzo, right? But I was fortunate that I didn't kick myself out and got my own experience doing it, right? Especially not making money. I still don't take money at PitcherList. And it's one of the things I think, especially in this industry, it's really hard to jump in because you have to create a skill. You have to have the skill first. In every other profession of some kind, there is more development of said skill before you apply to jobs and stuff like that. And this is one where, you know, you can't just like start writing on it. You have to actually develop that skill of doing it. And if there's no like schooling for it specifically. Sure, there's journalism, but honestly, journalism is totally different to me than fantasy baseball writing. It's a different thing. You shouldn't be doing APA formatting, I think, when writing. It's about writing with a flow that has character to it, but isn't stagnant, but you're getting to the point, you're being analytical. It's a whole different animal. We actually have our own style guide at PitcherList that is goes against APA because I'm like, well, that reads stupid online. I don't care. Like, I don't want that to be the thing, right? I capitalize top 50 as two different things. I don't hyphenate it, you know, as you're supposed to. Stuff like that. So it's, and it's one that, I mean, over time, I'm super happy that you focused on. I try as much as I can now to really express that because I'm sure that if, you know, and I kind of regret I didn't reach out to you and kind of say like, this is, you know, this is why.
That's a tough conversation to have. I think it's very tough.
Difficult one. I'm trying to be,
you're not trying to come off, like, you don't want to be discouraging, but at the same time, it can come off that way. And honestly, and like when I did that back when, Alex put together the, internship deal, the whole,
the mentorship program. Yeah.
Not internship, but yeah, I was not the best mentor. I had Taurus Takes of all people,
You had Taurus. Oh, that's great.
I had Taurus and a great dude, but, I was a terrible mentor because I had bit off so much more than I could chew. Again, he was one of the guys that would DM me. I would say, oh, I'm going to get to it. And I would forget. And then he had to remind me.
I've done this and
I felt terrible because I was, because he actually, and look, he's stuck around to this day and he's doing things in the industry now. But I do remember the one good piece of advice I gave him. And I hope that if he listens to this, I really hope he remembers this. Because I wasn't a great mentor. Unfortunately, I could have been better. But my one thing was, is don't go into it. I remember what he gave me. And I was like, look, man, these are great points, but you're ignoring X, Y, and Z. And it was, don't ever go into a player breakdown trying to create your own outcome. Let what you find tell you, dictate how you should feel about this player. Yeah. And that was one of the things that I feel like that was like the one, I remember that one, the reason why I remember this, because I feel like that was the one thing that we connected on was like, after all this time of me finally, like, you know, being absent-minded or being busy, we finally sat down. That was like the one piece of advice. And I think he took it and ran with it. And that was like the one thing I was like, I feel like I helped Taurus. Like, and yeah, of course, and then since then, you know, I've shouted him out. I've helped try to help his reach because he does good work. And he's, and he talk about personality, putting his personality into his work, those videos he puts on Twitter and all the stuff he just does. It's just so much fun. Taurus is such a good dude. And it was just one of those things though. Yeah. I felt bad.
Jeff Sullivan is one of my favorite writers. And I often say like, hey guys, emulate your favorite writer. Like,
yeah,
you have to, you know, Picasso had to learn how to paint amazingly before he did what he wanted to do. That is
take what you like.
Terrible way of phrasing it. But anyway, Jeff Sullivan, I remember meeting him at the Sabre conference or whatever on Staten Island or something, some event, 2016. And somebody asked him like, oh, James Shields just got traded. It was the James Shields Tatis deal. And he was going to write about Shields going to Chicago. And they said, what are you going to write about? He goes, I have no idea, but I'm going to write about something, whatever I find. And that skill of saying, okay, I'm going to write about X player and knowing that you're going to find something and write about it that's worthy of an article is so important. Where you just kind of do your process, you trust your process, you trust your words to be good enough. You know, I took from that when I was at Fangraphs, I just said, all right, I went off to my Slack channel or now Discord and said, guys, who do you want me to write about? Like, literally, who is on your mind that you feel like there needs to be some analysis on? They go, oh, Jordan Montgomery. Or, you know, I was like, all right, I'll have something for you guys tomorrow. And that would be the article, right? And that's so important. So I think that's fantastic advice you gave Torres.
Yeah. And what you mentioned,
one track mind about just like whatever it is and not saying this is definitive or this is the output.
Yeah.
Just saying, this is where he's at right now. I'm curious if you can keep that up.
Like, oh, look, there's a change. But is it a blip on the radar?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I'm very big on the word monitoring. And I started getting people joking at me on Twitter, like, oh, is this something worth monitoring? I'm like, well, yeah. And because I'm like, that's why I always put it's worth monitoring because of that reason, because it's worth monitoring. Everything's worth monitoring.
Right.
But I feel the need to put that in every tweet, like, especially with my niche being lineup stuff, because it's so in and out and up and down and changes almost daily for some teams, weekly for many.
Sure.
So I'm like, hey, like Cedric Mullins is platooning. He sat versus three out of the last four lefties.
Yeah.
Worth monitoring because guess what? Next week there's an injury. He's not platooning anymore. Or, oh, he picked up a hot streak. He's not platooning anymore. Yeah, but
this is me. This is my fault is I put out exciting tweets because all of a sudden something new happens. And I just get really excited. I should be putting asterisk. It's worth monitoring. This might not be what happens for the next year, but I always feel like I don't really care. I'm just saying that this is an exciting thing.
But now people sit there and say, "Well, Nick said this is what's happening." Well, Nick said this is what's happening. It's what's happening right now.
I'm not saying that it's going to happen forever. But, now I'm saying, "Oh my God, he just hit 98. This is awesome."
But and now you need. But if you don't do that, 94. if you don't put that little, if you don't make the character fit, if you don't, people hold you to it type of thing. Whereas
I'm with you, and I find myself doing the same thing. But it's also like, don't be upset at me. I didn't say that he was going to do it forever. That's on you. That's on you to translate it right or wrong. I can't fit in all the, maybe I should put in my bio is like, my excitement does not equal future. You know, like the Mitch Keller thing. I love that one.
The velocity.
The velocity. I was just like, guys, this is obviously better.
Yeah,
I'm excited about this.
I mean, I can't help the fastball didn't have movement. I can't help that he threw a flat
bad
fastball.
Heater. Apparently he has some amazing stuff slider. I don't know.
The writing thing real quick, I want to touch on that because the big thing is for new writers, read a lot of people. I'm guilty. I don't read as much as I should anymore, but I don't have time like I used to.
It's hard. It's hard because if you're creating, you're not consuming.
And that's the thing is if I'm not putting out content, the last thing I honestly want to do is read usually. It's like the last thing I want to do is honestly take in content half the time because
read the ESPY roundup in the top 100.
Absolutely.
Every morning. It's the only way to stay on top of everything.
I do agree that that's actually a very, I do agree it's important. I'm not going to lie to you until I read it though.
Unbelievable, Mike.
Well, I told you I will be honest. I do believe because Simeone does something similar with his streamers. He has a daily article like what happened yesterday and even him, and he's one of my best friends in the industry. I tell him all the time, I don't read your work, Mike. Unless you tell me, hey, I want you to read this for feedback. Right. I honestly have a hard time just because sometimes the last thing I want to do to decompress is not do this, is not consume more. I know, and unfortunately, because of that, I miss out on so much, especially on the pitcher side, because I've become so enamored on the hitter side.
It's right there. It's just,
I know. There's so much. But honestly,
just be like, done, done, done.
Between you and Simeone, because you are two of my favorite guys in this space that covers pitchers. And not only are you two of my favorites, but you guys, I trust your analysis because you guys don't just, you guys, it's not even just fantasy related. It is overall analysis. It is, hey, this is actual change and actual stuff happening in these pitcher skill sets. That's the type of information I need more than just what's under the hood. I can look that up on Fangraphs in 2 seconds.
Great. I know, but I've got it all on one page.
Yes, okay. And that's why I said it's good, Nick. I'm not lying to you. I'm not blowing smoke up your butt. I promise you.
I don't know why you're not reading it, Mike.
Because I hate
ridiculous.
I hate taking in more content when I'm already producing so much.
I'm being completely facetious here. But I do want to talk more about all this. We got to take another very quick break. We got to do that right now. Okay. Mike Kurland, buddy. So you got that good one from Torres. That was the advice of, hey, you have the outlook. Don't have it beforehand. Generate it as you go through the process. What other major lessons did you learn across your journey?
So for writers, it goes back to actually do read. If you are a consumer first, because most people are a consumer, and I was a consumer too. I'm going right back into it, man.
You just said that you don't read anything, and it's do like as I read.
Do as I say, not as I do. I tell my kids this too.
Okay, fair enough. You're better. You're like me, coach, better than a player. Okay, I got you.
Yes. I said when you're starting, Nick. I'm not starting anymore.
I'm, Okay.
No, if you're starting out or if you want to get better, read a bunch of people who are successful or who are at places you want to be. Because you mentioned you have your own style. I didn't fit into your vision or style back then. That's fine. No, I never had hard feelings about it. I had to, of course, give you a hard time because you missed out. No, but at the end of the day, if you read a lot of people's work and you take from you pretty much make your own style. Take what you like, leave what you don't, and take that and form that, and then interject your own personality and opinions and your own, you know, process. You kind of like, it's like a little magic potion. You put all like sugar, spice, everything nice, you know, Powerpuff Girls, and poof, you get the power, you know, you get it.
And, when it comes to me, when it comes to like, okay, I'm jumping in making content, how do I do this? It always starts with the skill. It's like, what is it? I mean, you're saying you find the niche. That is part of it. Of saying, okay, you need to have something that is of value that people go to you for in some way. It's not just the niche of analysis. It's also the skill of being an entertainer and a presenter.
I think there's a happy balance there. I definitely do.
There has to be. It's so important to really grasp, like, all right, listen back to yourself. I listen back to my podcasts a ton.
I don't
as much anymore. I cannot stand my voice. But I needed to. I needed to see like, where are my cadences? Where am I bored? Where am I stopped listening? And it's so, you have to. It's what actors do. It's what every other, you know, baseball players watch film. It's if you expect to grow in this and really refine who your goals and refine yourself. Like that's the process and being as true as you can to what am I creating? Is it entertaining? Is it not? What are the things that the ones that I look up to, what do they do well? And something I got to hand to you, but Mike, I'm looking at you right now on a Sony camera with a SM7B mic, right? You got nice backlighting. I love it. You got some front lights too. You know, I need to rework my lighting. You just turned on another orange one in the corner. It looks great. I need to have stuff like that, right? But you looked at that and you said, okay, that is something that sets me apart, right? You do the YouTube stuff.
Quality.
Right?
You want to stand out. I was going to say, if you want to stand out in today's circle, in today's like industry, if you want to call it that. I mean, unfortunately, the standards are being set so high. And it used to be the days of a headset, I'm wearing just, you know, Apple headset, like an iPhone headset.
Earplugs, yeah.
Earplugs, whatever. Yeah. It's not even headset. You're right. Earplugs. You're right. I'm not bougie enough for a headset. It used to be as simple as this microphone in this earbuds and your computer's like built in camera. And you still can get started that way. Don't deter yourself from starting because you can't afford good quality stuff, but just know with the standard going up the way it has been, people, if I listen to a podcast for the first time and it's bad audio, I have a hard time sticking through it because it's gotten to a point where everyone has such good stuff on the, even at the low, at the lowest end, people have a microphone, like a what's it called? Can't think of the name of the mic now.
Blue Yeti is what people
the Blue Yeti. And that was
the one I recommend to everybody. It's a $60 package. You can find, it's called the Samson Q2U. It's what Adam Howe uses on the Wire.
And microphones are getting better and cheaper. So but that wasn't the case when we started. Remember, that was the big one. The big one. The Yeti, I can't remember. That thing was, that mine broke. Well, mine broke three months after having it.
One right to my right here.
That was the big thing to have. Everybody was like, oh, it's $100. And that's a lot. You know, that's a lot for us, for most of us. Like $100 isn't easy to come by.
And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is there are those elements of
ways to stand out.
There are things you can spend to make yourself stand out as far as the investment. This is, there's also of just what is my individual ability. This is a business of being a brand.
Well, and it goes back to Torres. Torres does it with minimal. Like, Torres literally will pull up his iPhone. You could probably go on his page right now and find videos. His personality and the way he attacks and approaches things, just the fun he brings. And it's always, he dressed up in a suit and gave an address, I think, for one of his little videos.
That was great.
And that's the thing. That was great. That's what, so Torres is building that brand around him having that personality. And I love that guy for it.
Right.
I wish I had that, because like this personality of mine, and I'm very, you know, I'm very like goofy, and I wish I brought that to my videos more. I'm working on that because sure. I feel like I approach my videos almost more professional, which is weird because the whole point of this is to have fun and bring this energy. And I'm like, I watch back my videos. I'm like, where's that energy you have? Where's that natural, like, oh, you're talking fast. Oh, you're stumbling over your words. And I feel like part of it's because it's harder to edit and do jump cuts when you are stumbling over your words in editing. But ultimately it's
that's part of it too. Being a YouTube guy, you have a script and you need to be able to dictate well and be able to be an orator, right? That's a huge thing.
I hate the script part because I'm so much better at just like, I'm going to go off the top of my head or I'm going to do it on the fly.
There are prompters that are relatively cheap that I've actually considered at times getting just to be like, all right, I should have one of these if I am going to do any sort of video.
Yeah.
I mean, right now I just have my camera right above my monitor and I just have a text pad that I use internally and for staff. I do a monthly State of the Union. To like tell the entire staff what's going on and stuff.
But
I just enjoy it because it's like, why not? I have a company. I'll do a State of the Union.
Yeah,
that sounds hilarious.
That is. But that goes back to what you were saying, that if you aren't going to, again, this equipment is a lot of money. Like, let's be honest. So the average person probably isn't that either this want to be this invested or doesn't have that type of money right away, which again, this was also over years and years of saving up the little bit of money I was making from fantasy, or if I made some extra money at work via overtime, you know, or if I won my leagues instead of, you know, I would spend money doing into this stuff because I enjoyed it. Just Govier is another great one that stands out just by having that personality. He has really good equipment, but what he's known for is his little things like his Twitter rants on his videos of, you know, being open. And it's this thing. So it's like, if you don't want to spring for the money for this, or if you don't want to, or if you can't find ways to stand out. And that's one way of doing it. Just letting your personality shine.
One thing I do want to mention, and that's how much marketing is important.
Yeah, I'm bad at that. I don't know how I've made it this far.
Well, the thing is, marketing is one of the hardest things. So for me personally, what I did is that I was very fortunate with Reddit. I was a Redditor for ages, especially when it still had the stigma. I mean, it still has a stigma, but not nearly what it was.
Yeah.
And I launched Pitcher Gifts, and I knew that our baseball would love it. So I put it up, and it became the top thing. And for the first day, it was like 40,000 views in the top 24 hours. And I was just like, okay, clearly I have something that works here. Shut down my site, but I spent all this time on it, right? And I will also keep in mind, anything like this, like, yeah, again, I don't take a salary. I've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah.
It has to be something that if you're going to jump into it, you have to spend something. You know, if it's your time, if it's money, I mean, both, it's you're not going to have any.
It's an investment.
You really do. And don't get any idea that it's just going to be like, oh, okay, 6 months, I'm going to do this and then that's it. Like, no, this is, you have to really lean into it. And if you're doing it for only 6 months and expecting success, that means at the start, you have to know all the things you have to do, which isn't the case. You learn everything on as you go. But anyway, going back to marketing, Reddit, I used to post the nastiest GIF every single morning, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, to our baseball until they, I think, banned me in 2018. Or something like that. I'm not banned anymore, thankfully. But they eventually were like, this is too much self-promotion. Even though all it is now is just tweets. Like, literally our baseball in season is just tweets. And it drives me insane. I was a Redditor first, made the site for our baseball, and became like the only like organic OP, you know, and everything, like the OC guy. And then like, they're like, yeah, this is now you've become too much of a thing. So you can't do it anymore. It was ridiculous. Anyway. I still was on our fantasy baseball, though. Every single Friday, starting in 2014, I would post an AMA. I just said I was an expert. And this was the last year. The last year I did that was 2021. Scott Chu did in 2022. But that made it so that all my articles were there. I the person, had a brand, not Pitcher List, because I was interacting with that community as much as I was, right? Then Twitter became a thing. I don't know how the Twitter followers got to where it was. I was posting GIFs as much as I could. I started doing that in 2014. Pitching Ninja started doing it in 2015. We kind of both were doing it for ages. I kind of stopped doing it because I found that it just wasn't worth it anymore for me to do it. And there are all these other projects I wanted to do. And the amount of time it takes, I mean, what Rob does is insane. The amount of work that goes into that. But that's what he has to do all the time for that one account. And I was like, well, I've got all these projects and I can't just do that anymore. But that got me that Twitter following that allowed me to bring in this stuff. I was able to do articles that weren't just fantasy baseball. I was able to do gift breakdowns that allowed me with gifts to, I did stuff with Washington Post for a while. And that all of a sudden allowed opened other doors. But that's the kind of marketing I'm going for, is saying, look, these different social media avenues, I was able to actually have website stuff generated for, and then word of mouth over years. Then, of course, Spore taking a liking to me and then bringing me on to Sleeper in the Bust. That was a huge moment because I was the first like pitching guy since Eno had left. Eno left the previous year and I was the first one of the year. And I studied. I spent 20, like a day before, 24 hours. Like I knew the outline. I had notes on every single guy. I wasn't going through tabs and stuff. I had my whole document of it all filled out. And every point I had a counter argument and stuff talking about pitch types and everything. And that I know, like I was interviewing staffers at the end of the year. They were like, oh yeah, I think I heard you on Sleeper in the Bus or something like that. And I checked out pitcher list and that was that. And it's those kind of moments and those things, those opportunities. And I've met so many great people like Spore that have given me those chances that has opened the exposure to pitchers over the years. But it's a process. It is, you know, doing a variety of things in different places to get that opportunity. And it can be very hard just being inside of one of these places and doing one aspect of it. There has to be some broad expansion of really what you're doing. The other thing that we're noticing is, oh my Lord, for being a website, you have to do SEO. Jesus, it is... It is so, so important. I cannot emphasize that enough. And it's just how people work these days. You rarely go to a website directly anymore. You just search it.
You Google.
Yeah, that's it. And I hate how much we're just reliant on Google. But that's very much the case.
It's ridiculous. So,
it's really, I think it's a lot harder now. I've said many times before that I would not start a website now if I were doing the whole thing.
See, that's what I'm wondering.
Marketing right now, my understanding is that you're supposed to do YouTube shorts and TikToks, and you're supposed to make them rapid. There's a certain formula for making a good TikTok or YouTube short that is like you start the thing. It's supposed to be 10, 15 seconds. You make your point. You get out. You do quick cuts. You do things on the screen of saying what you're saying. Like it's that. And you move on, and it needs to be a good audio. It needs to be a good video. Get out.
So I'm glad you mentioned that because one of my things I wrote down here, because I was going to actually write, I'll go through each of these before we finish up this conversation. Just ways to help new people stand out because it's becoming more and more competitive. But it's weird though, because since 2020, obviously people have gone back to work and all that, you know, since COVID and that break.
Sure. Maybe gone down a little because
it's gone back down a little bit because people have to return their regular lives. Sure. And because I remember there was a big boom I was like, I was thankful.
Everyone did it during COVID, right? Yeah. You started a podcast. Yeah.
But I don't know if you looked at you mentioned these TikToks and I realized, so I'm actually right now I'm doing this little, I'm investigating what's working best for my account right now. I'm seeing growth on it. And I've realized anything with my face, which makes me self-conscious, but anything with my face on it, talking for more than 10 seconds. And I do the jump cuts. I have pictures. I have video on there with my face. It's not just my face. Anything with my face, I'm looking at a couple hundred views, maybe a couple thousand. I have a video that has 185,000 views on TikTok right now of just Corbin Carroll running the bases and stats popping up on the screen while he's running for 8 seconds.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. And so if you look at and right now I have 12.7K views on it's Cedric Mullins striking out, cutting to just a picture of him with stats on the screen about his splits versus lefties. Right. And it's 8 seconds, I think.
Yeah.
And that's
the title of it. What is the thumbnail for it? What is the title for it?
Yeah. And for shorts right now, they're actually, because I do my homework again, taking this stuff very serious. I spend hours on YouTube pretty much watching the same information from different people. So I try to find the occasional nugget like, oh, I didn't hear that one yet. And right now, shorts, they're actually doing this whole thing where they're not letting you always put a thumbnail on the shorts. They're trying to see, YouTube's doing something on purpose. Some users can, some users can't.
Right.
So TikTok, I'm having, like, I'll post 3 times a day because I have a whole bunch of backlog stuff right now.
Yep.
And I'm getting, like, my last three, I have one that has 1,500 and the last two have 300 or less. So it's like, I'm not doing anything different except for the, like, the, maybe the player. And I'm realizing if you're quick, like, say, you know, somebody got traded or Wilson Contreras got signed to the Cardinals. If you're able to get something out as soon as possible about that, it'll get like 5K views pretty quick because people are searching that. It's relevant information. But the fact that I randomly got 184K views on my Corbin Carroll video, which I'm like, where's this popularity for Corbin Carroll coming from? No idea.
But they're just signing it to baseball. Anyone who's into baseball just shows up on their homepage, right?
It may be. And that's another thing. I've realized my shorts are very, they're not so fantasy focused as much as like I'm breaking down splits. I'm talking about a player's change in profile or, hey, they're like my tweets. If you look at my tweets, it's the same ideas. There's fantasy relevance in terms of I'll tell you why I'm in or out on a player based on the good and bad in a profile, but it's usually a breakdown of a profile or a breakdown of a trend. So there's more real life baseball aspects. I think that's why my and stuff for football and baseball can get a little more traction on these, on these platforms for the shorts and stuff, because It's although my account is fantasy focused, the shorts and even most of my information is generalized focused in terms of just like an offensive production for a hitter, et cetera, et cetera. So I've realized I do have some appeal, which helps me out because, like we've mentioned, there isn't much fantasy baseball interest in which is weird because everything else, every niche is oversaturated on these platforms except for fantasy baseball.
Just because my gear is going about like
it makes you want to do it.
What I literally want to do. Is right now I want to try and find a video editor who I record the voiceover, give the little script that's like 8 seconds long about like each pitcher. And I would be like, all right, this is my thing on this guy. And then I hire a video editor to be like, here are like X amount of them. These are literally supposed to be under 10 seconds each. And say, cool, for like the, you know, I need these out like one a day or so across February and March or something like that. Here's X amount of dollars I'm going to give you for that. And just like I can, because a lot of these things are very much of, man, I would do all these videos about, oh, let me tell you about Aaron Nola's curveball, you know, and I know exactly how it would go. It's just I don't have the time to do it. But I can do, if it especially doesn't involve my face, if it's literally I don't have to do any video for it, I can just record the audio. I can do the voiceover script. I can send the audio and I'm done in like not even 5 minutes for each of these.
Well, that's the thing. So and I have a process. Right. I've built this little process now and I have it pre-saved on my Adobe where a short, as long as I have the information, I can knock out a short in 10, 15 minutes. It's the fact that I keep toying with different ideas because I am still trying to be the face. Like I know I can get success without using my face. Right. I'm trying to make it more personable experience because YouTube, I want them to go. You can't monetize short term.
That's the thing though, is what is the brand is an important question to ask, because if you're just trying to do a YouTube channel, who cares if they see your face or not? They'll see your face on the YouTube channel.
But
all you're trying to do for these shorts, the only purpose of these shorts
is for viral.
Is just let it be popular. Doesn't matter what about it is popular.
I try to change things up. I know.
No, I know. But yeah, this is fantastic what you're saying. You're aggravating. I love this.
It's aggravating though, because I want it to work to where, because like I want pop-up text. So I've been toying with the, let me use my face, but let me use pop-up text. Cause that way at least engages the people's eyes on the text and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on now. I'm jump cutting. I'm changing the size of my screen. I have stuff going on in the bottom half. These are the phone videos, not even the wide shot.
You know, they should be vertical.
I have vertical video and it's like, but it's done like really well, a lot better than what you see. But it frustrates me because there's people doing it worse than me, having more success. And I'm wondering where's that wall that I can't break through. I'm wondering if it's me. Like, is it just, do I need more personality in my videos? I'm not very clickbaity. I know my titles could be better.
If I were you, I would just like try all the different personas that you think you're comfortable with and just see what the heck happens. You know, that's the whole thing we're trying to talk about here is that what is development without failure?
A lot. I promise you will fail more than you succeed. But when you succeed, it's usually in a big way. It's usually like you'll notice, oh, I found something that works. Oh, I just blew up like 1,000 followers, or I got like all this attention.
Just do Shohei Ohtani videos.
Dude, I get retweets from random Shohei accounts all the time. I'll have a Shohei account and get like 25 retweets.
My three biggest videos are all Shohei Ohtani. And I'm like, all right, I'll just become a Shohei Ohtani channel, I guess. I don't know.
It makes you want to. Because there's, it's funny though, because there's like no carryover. Like all this exposure, it's great. But then when none of it's actual carryover for like the channel growth, or they realize, oh, you talk about other things, they're out.
I realize we've gone very long here. And I, the hour has passed easily. And I'm so sad to cut this off. But there is one last question I ask everybody, Mike. And what mantra do you carry with yourself day to day?
Just go with the flow, I guess.
Just go with the flow. All right, there you go. I like it. Yeah, absolutely.
It's simple, but it's true. I literally just take
Mike's face there. He was I normally tell everybody beforehand that there is one so they aren't surprised. And I totally forgot with Mike.
It's fine, but it's really what holds true to me. I really just go. I keep an open mind. Whatever the day hands my way, I kind of just go with it. And in terms of content ideas and stuff like that, just go with what comes. Like if you feel strongly about something, give it a shot. And if it doesn't work, adapt or drop it and figure out something else. But just go with the flow and follow what.
Strike when the iron's hot. You feel that for a second? Oh man, that's a blessing. And really,
And give it time.
That is that spark for a moment and go into it.
And give it time, because if it doesn't work, maybe you just got to change a little thing about it. And
10 years it's taken. I'm still not quite done. I'm far from done.
I've put so much time and effort into this, and I feel like every day I'm like, what? Like, how can I make something better? And then I look back and I'm like, how did I think this was good? And it's like there's always it's striving for that sense of perfection that doesn't exist that will drive us crazy, Nick.
Oh yeah.
You know, but it's what is also what fuels us. It fuels us, though.
That's what ambition. That's what you get strives us forward. Exactly. All right, Mike Kurland, where can everybody find you and support you? GTE Fantasy. Make sure you go to patreon.com/GTE Fantasy. Support the wonderful crew there, putting out some great stuff for the season ahead. Where else can they find you?
YouTube, like I said, the YouTube, I'm gonna end TikTok, I guess, Gaining the Edge or GTE Fantasy. I'm not even sure what my handle is on these places. Just look up those, you'll find them. I know, I told you I'm terrible. Well, I've changed the names of them a couple times because I try to merge a few ideas. I'm like, no, let me just stick to the fantasy. So Gaining the Edge or GTE Fantasy on everything. But if you're into video content, those two places, TikTok and YouTube specifically. And then just
Google it, right? No one goes straight to the website.
And then Mike_Kurland on Twitter.
There we go. Give Mike a follow. But that's going to do it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock, and that was my friend, Mike Kurland.